And welcome to Weather and Ag in Focus, 107 in the afternoon. Temperatures are stuck in the 50s, even some 40s out to our west. I'm Chief Meteorologist Dean Wysocki, alongside with our wonderful, talented Ag Director, Bridget Riedel. Good afternoon, Bridget. How's the day going so far?
Going really well. A little bit cooler than yesterday, so it feels more fall-like, but you've consistently said that won't last forever. That's going to switch around pretty quickly as well.
Yeah, we're still on that roller coaster ride through the weekend, but then we're starting to see signs of pattern change coming in here at the end of the month and into early November. We need it because we really have to bring some precip in into the area. We received a little bit overnight and early this morning, but boy, it wasn't much. And just not much on the horizon. We'll run over the forecast later on. But we have an early guest joining us, if I'm not mistaken.
We have a jam-packed day. We have two guests today. And our first one is indeed an early guest. And she is competing at the National FFA Convention in Indianapolis this week. So we get a couple of students who get to call in and tell us what's going on. So I'd like to introduce Layla Krinke. She's from the Scranton, North Dakota FFA chapter. Layla, how are you?
Good. How are you?
We're great. So, all right. You are competing in the Food Products and Processing Systems Agri-Science Fair. What is that? Because we have a lot of listeners who'd say, what are you doing down there, Layla?
Yeah. So at State FFA this year, my Agri-Science Fair qualified for nationals. So I did a Zoom interview a couple months ago, and now I'll be able to attend national convention and see how I did.
That's outstanding. So, Layla, what year in school are you out in Scranton?
I'm a freshman.
Oh, man. So this is kind of a new competition. You're young and kind of just getting your feet under you in the FFA, aren't you?
Yeah, kind of.
Is this your first national convention in Indianapolis?
This is actually my second. I went last year, too.
Okay. And what's your impression? What do you think so far?
Well, I think that's pretty good. We've just been traveling here so far, and it'll start on Wednesday. But other than that, it's been pretty good.
Go ahead, Dean. I saw you looking up there for a question.
I was going to say, Layla, this is your second year. What are you expecting this year going to Indianapolis compared to last year's FFA convention?
I think that'll be a lot cooler just because I get to walk across national stage to receive my award. I think that'll be really exciting to do.
That's great.
That'll be very exciting because Layla is one of 70,000 students, advisors, and guests who are in Indianapolis. So correct me if I'm wrong, but the bulk of the convention sessions will be held at Lucas Oil Stadium, right?
Yep, it's held right in the stadium.
So that's how big this youth convention is. When you come back to Scranton, what are some of the other contests that you participate in, Layla?
I do livestock judging and meat judging.
And what was the last one?
Meat judging.
Excellent. Okay, so that means you're going to get more familiar spending time in locker plants and butcher shops in order to do great grading and identifying of different cuts of beef, correct?
Yep.
So with your award, Layla, do you have a plaque? Do you have scholarship money that you're getting? Anything like that?
Yeah, so I think top three receive the cash prizes as well as a pin.
And if it's an agri-science fair, what was your project about?
So my project was determining how different pH levels of water affect yeast fermentation in bread. So I baked different loaves of bread with different pH levels of water, and I saw what the different rise in dough was and height in the bread loaves.
Wow. So what was good or what was bad? I mean, what pH correlated with your best breads?
So the pH of 7 was actually the best, and that is what the normal pH level of water is. And then I also had the pH level of 3, 5, 8 and 10, and those ones performed less than the pH level of 7.
Do you plan to do more agri-science fairs over time?
Yeah, I think so. I think I'll try to do one each year.
So, for your travels from Scranton, North Dakota to Indianapolis, are you there? Have you arrived today?
No, not yet. So we actually went to Louisville, and now we're touring some museums.
Excellent.
We were just at the Churchill Downs.
Yeah. Oh, fantastic. I've done that as well. That's a great tour. Oh,
yeah.
So, cool. Layla, thank you for taking time to update us on what you're doing at National Convention and what your trip has been like. We want you to have a wonderful week at convention, and you can feel free to just let us know how things turn out for you later on this week, okay?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Talk to you soon. Bye.
What a great honor for her. That's awesome.
A great honor. She's a freshman and already going to look at national awards.
And her second, this is her second year too.
Second year. And again, I just want to emphasize 70,000 students are arriving, and FFA is not quite 100 years old yet. It was originally started in 1929. And at that time, membership dues were just 10 cents.
Right. Not anymore.
Not anymore. The organization has now more than 1 million active members.
Right. Well, we've got John on line one, Bridget.
I think what's he got?
He's probably got some beef with one of us. So, John, welcome to Weather and Ag and Focus. What's your beef?
Yeah, Wysocki, what's the disconnect? You know, I don't get it. The gym to my house is 3 blocks as the crow flies. Whatever.
I still haven't picked up my gift package yet.
Exactly. So it's raining, you know, little raindrops on my windshield again, which is good because we need the dang rain.
Mm-hmm.
But the chemtrails were getting really wide the last couple of days. So that's one thing that's troubling me. The other thing that's troubling me is I saw a whole bunch of chemtrails going straight up from Area 51 when they got swatted with that rain the other night.
Uh-huh.
Boy, they got a deluge, evidently.
So you're putting two together here.
Well, I'm thinking they had to dump inventory, get everybody out of there, because, you know, most of that stuff's below ground. So that was probably a problem. But the other thing that's driving me nuts here, yesterday I'm watching the Fox Weather Channel at lunch, right? And they're talking about a tropical storm that was named Nadine, that's now named Kirsten, or been renamed Kirsten, which makes no sense because K comes before N. And then they're not even politically correct because it should have been Nadine turned into Keith. Just my opinion.
Okay. John, you know we always appreciate your opinion.
So I want some answers, Wysocki.
Well, tell you what.
You got.
I'll be like, you know what? I'll be like a politician, John. We'll look into it, and let me get back to you on that.
Okay, I'll go with that answer.
Okay.
Vote early, vote often.
There you go. Got it, John. Hey, thanks for joining us. Oh, man. He's a character, isn't he, Bridget?
That's why John calls in, is because he wants to make sure that we have the latest information. You'll notice I didn't say facts.
Very good point. Oh, we've got a guest coming up here. I believe this is his first time on the show.
It is. So we are going to be joined by yet another guest today. I mean, man, when we do stuff, we go all
out. Go big or go home.
We'll be joined by Jason Starwalker. They are with Starwalker Organic Farms. He and his wife, Christina, have this operation, and they've been operating for 3 generations. And I think there's some really great questions that we want to ask him, and we hope the rest of you do too. And you can reach us on the Red Wing Shoe line of 701-293-9000. Send us your emails, weatherorag@flagfamily.com. And keep an eye on us. We're on Facebook, YouTube, and Acres TV live streaming today. So with any questions, let us know. But we'll be back again with Jason from Starwalker Organic Farms, and we'll visit with him about their operation right after this. Welcome back to Weather and Ag. So glad that you are here with us today. and much, much going on. We've already had a live report from the National FFA Convention in Indianapolis this week, and we'll hear again from another student on Thursday who's also down there competing in a contest. So it's kind of fun to hear North Dakota will be represented well. There'll be 230 students competing, and again, there's 70,000 attendees in Indianapolis. It's so big, they're using an NFL stadium for their convention hall. I like that part. So also very happy that we have so many great sponsors who've been part of our Here We Grow project as we custom farm 20 acres of corn this year. And again, our proceeds are going to be donated to Farm Rescue. And we thank Steffes Group. If you are interested in learning more about equipment sales, especially if you've got something you want to trade post-harvest, Steffes Group is there to help. They just expanded. They bought another group up in Canada, and so they've got an even wider reach for more equipment opportunities for you to buy or sell. And then Dakota Bank, right here in town. They're based out of Aberdeen, South Dakota, but they have a branch location in Fargo. They're ready to help serve you in all the ways possible, consumer loans and so much more. So reach out to Dakota Bank. And excited to introduce our guest today, Jason Starwalker, Starwalker Organic Farms. And Jason, how are you today?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
We're doing great. Yeah. Thanks.
It's not snowing, so we're doing good.
So, Jason, if you would care to give our listeners some background, where are you and tell us about your operation?
Yeah, I'd love to. So we're based in Northern California, and what a lot of people consider Northern California would probably be Sacramento, but we're still another 4.5 hours north of Sacramento, right on the Oregon border, really, essentially. And we have a beautiful little valley called Scott Valley that, you know, there's not very many people that live here, and there's a lot of farming, and so we're a big part of that. We are a third generation farm. So my grandparents bought the farm in the early 70s. My parents took over by default because they got out of college and didn't have a general direction. They both had degrees, and my dad had a master's, and for whatever reason, they ended up back at the farm and they stayed here. And so they took over back in the mid 70s. And then about 12 years ago, my wife and I came back. And we took over the operation from them. So we've been rapidly growing. Our original farm that my grandparents bought in the 70s was had about 200 acres of farm ground and about 800 acres of grazing hill ground. And we've expanded since then, since we took over 12 years ago. And we're roughly about 1,200, 1,300 acres of farm ground and about 2,500 acres of grazing hill ground. So we've expanded pretty rapidly, and you know, we've got a pretty sizable cattle herd, and we're pretty sizable pig herd too. So we're certified organic, been certified organic for roughly 40 years now. So that's our big a big claim to fame, I guess, is being organic for that long. And most recently got a regenerative organic certification, which is a whole nother aspect of what we do. So, yeah, it's a lot of fun, and we love what we do.
And, Jason, for those of us that aren't really ag educated, for any of our listeners that aren't quite sure, what's the difference between organic farming and just the regular farming that you see here in the Northern Plains?
Yeah, great question. You know, organic is, I mean, I shouldn't say it's a new thing, but, you know, like I say, we've been organic for 40 years. But back when my parents originally went organic, you know, they were kind of on the fringe. You know, it was the kind of the hippie movement, I guess, maybe. And nowadays, you know, I think organic farming really just means, you know, no pesticides, no herbicides, you know, no medications in the animals. You know, pretty much just trying to utilize the best you can with your soil, you know, taking care of your animals in whatever way you can. That doesn't mean you're having to, you know, put a lot of inputs into them. It's not that we can't. Those animals just would end up not being, they'd have to go to a conventional market, which is fine. But all of our crops, all of our range ground, everything is all certified organic. And, you know, we just try to put least amount of inputs, not that we can't put inputs, chicken manure and some other things, compost teas and stuff we do, but people say we get less yields than conventional, but you know, we've had really good results and we seem to do really well on the organic side, and our markets really show that. We sell out of our meat and our pork and our hay every year.
Now, is it more expensive to farm organically, or is it a little cheaper?
Well, it's interesting because on the side of inputs, it's definitely cheaper. You know, we don't spend a ton of money on like I say, the herbicides and pesticides and the fertilizers and stuff like that. But you know, I would say that you know maybe our crops aren't as clean as maybe a conventional crop, but our markets don't really, that doesn't bother us. If there's some weeds or some grasses in our hay, that's what our customers want. They basically want that clean organic hay. And, you know, my opinion is, you know, I'm obviously biased, but, you know, I think it's better for the soil, and I think, you know, it's good for the animals as well. So, you know, the inputs are a little different, and sometimes it affects yields by not being able to put some of those things on your crop.
Jason, there's so many things to ask. One of the questions I have is, what's your growing season like in Northern California? I mean, we forget as you go from the top of the state to the south, how long and how many different climate changes can happen within the state of California. But what's it like where you're at?
Yeah, that's a great question, because Southern California, I think they pretty much farm year round, and they have a whole different season than us. We are basically we can get out on the fields usually in April, start some spring planning, some spring work, and then our season pretty much is over by October 1st. Sometimes we can carry into October a little bit. This October has been very, very warm and sunny, and so you know we've been able to do a little bit more in the fields. But most of the time, by October 1st or mid-October, we're done. You know, rains start coming in. It's hard to get out in the fields. And we don't get a lot of snow here. You know, we might get some accumulation here and there, but it doesn't stick around for long. But we do get our full, you know, we get all of our seasons. We get a really nice spring, a really nice fall, and a good winter, and a very hot summer, unfortunately.
And what are you raising with in your climate zone? You know, where we live, we are so very diversified with a variety of not only small grains, corn and soybeans, to some non-traditional crops like sugar beets, potatoes, even mint. But I would venture a guess your diversification is very different from ours.
Yeah, for sure. So we primarily do hay in this area. We do a little bit of grain. I do raise grain for my pigs. But our primary crop is alfalfa and grass. So we're growing a lot of grass for the cattle. We're growing a lot of alfalfa. My higher end alfalfa goes to dairies. And then anything that doesn't quite meet dairy standards, you know, runs through my cattle. And we do a lot of silage here. It does really well in the animals. So we put up a lot of silage early in the season and then sometimes again late in the season. But we're primarily grain and alfalfa and hay crops here. Every once in a while, you know, we do some cover crops, but, you know, every once in a while somebody will try some sunflowers or, you know, a different thing than that. But in our neck of the woods, you have to go about 2 or 3 hours south, and then you get into the rice country and the nuts and stuff like that. We don't really have the climate for that up here, but the hay grows. I mean, we're renowned for our mountain grass hay up here, and you know, we send it all over the state of California and all over the West, really.
Well, I'm looking forward to asking more questions about that and so much more, especially as you said, you know, grandma, grandpa, and mom and dad were kind of in that hippie movement of organics, but that's not as hippie as someone might think. So when we come back, exactly. I want to continue to ask some of those questions of Jason. He is with Starwalker Organic Farms in Northern California, and we have the opportunity to visit with him about what they do and this whole regenerative thing. It's a word that we all talk about frequently in agriculture, and what does it mean to him? So we'll be right back with your questions and more after this. And welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus. I hope you're having a wonderful afternoon. You might be listening in a combine cab, might be folding the laundry, might be at your desk getting some work done. And we're glad you're taking the time to listen to us while you do all those things. We're joined today by Jason Starwalker. He is with Starwalker Ranch, or excuse me, Starwalker Organic Farms, and they are in Northern California. Okay, Jason, a couple of things. One of them was we talked about the farm being organic for 40 years. So there's really no need to ask about the transition to that. You've been doing it. And how did that start out for Grandma and Grandpa? Like you said, they maybe were thought to be a little bit of the hippies before people caught on to what you were doing.
Yeah. So back when my parents decided to go organic, you know, it was very fringe. And they were, I think, probably one of the first 20 or 30 in the state of California farms that went organic. You know, since then, it's obviously become very popular. You know, there's farms all over the country doing it and big scale all over the country. When we took over in 2012, we decided to diversify a little bit. You know, when I was really young, we had some cattle and we got rid of them. We did herbs and spices. We did a lot of, you know, kind of more intensive crops when I was younger, potatoes, corn. When we took over, we really wanted to focus on the animal side of the agriculture. And so we started building our cattle herd back up again. We started building our pig herd back up. And that was kind of our big focus. We started doing direct to consumer in 2020. You know, that was a big time for us. We were able to do really well on the direct to consumer side. And all of our products are all organic. You know, there's a lot of people who do mixed operations. We just decided from the beginning to do everything across the board organic, easier for paperwork, easier for us as farm operation and employees and everything. And so we've grown pretty rapidly in our pork and our beef sales online. And we actually recently bought a processing plant so we can actually have full control of the operation from start to finish. You know, we're getting into retail with some of our products. So that's really fun. But I think organic nowadays, versus when my parents started, you know, it's more mainstream. People seek it out. People are looking for it. You know, there's pretty much all the products across the board in the supermarket. You can get organic. And I think those, you know, it's a different clientele sometimes, but you know, those are the people that really love our products and support us. And we love what we do on the organic side as well.
When I go to your website and I'm looking at StarwalkerOrganicFarms.com, so for those of you who have the internet close by, check them out. And I'm on the best-selling products list. They look great. We eat with our eyes. And all the cuts that you have there are excellent, from whole cow beef bundles down to smaller packaging, such as just a steak and bacon delivery box. Now, what I wanted to ask, and I heard you say this, I just want to clarify, organic with livestock means you're not treating. So you're not worried about vaccinations, et cetera, because you have good herd health. Your animals are generally in very good health. But if an animal got sick, if you had to treat with an antibiotic or anything like that, then you have a process, right, to take them out of the organic lineup, you might say, and move them over to a conventional market, correct? Because you want to make sure that that animal still gets treated well. They just might not fit your operation. Would that be fair?
Yeah, you're 100% right. So we have a protocol in our organic system plan. And basically that says if we have a sick animal, we treat it, we tag it differently so that we know that it's, you know, been treated. And then we usually just sell that into a conventional market. So I have, you know, there's auction yards or, you know, other people that want those animals. So we definitely make sure we take care of the animals. We don't want sick animals either. We don't want to see them die. So we take care of the animals and they just go into a different market. And we make sure we tag them and keep really good records so that when we have our organic inspections that they can see how we treated the animal and where that animal went.
You know, Jason, you made mention of you not only have had the organic certification, but now there is organic regenerative certification. What does that entail? And what comes to mind for me is thinking about, you know, using manure on your fields instead of synthetic fertilizers, et cetera. But it's probably more than that. What am I missing?
Yeah, no, that's actually a great question, because the regenerative organic, well, it's not. So what we are is we're certified regenerative organic, and that's a whole different certification. There's also other regenerative certifications you can get. But we're actually the first regenerative organic certified pork and beef producer in the U.S., which is pretty cool. There is some outside of the country beef producers, but being the first has been great. We've gotten a lot of notoriety. And what I feel like regenerative, the most important thing about it, I mean, these are practices we've been doing for a lot of years, being organic. But at the end of the day, it's really about the soil. If we don't have good soil, if we're not treating our soil right, you know, we're not going to be able to grow the products. We're not going to be able to feed the animals. So at the end of the day, I really, my whole heart goes into regenerative thinking, how can we better the soil? How can we utilize animals to run around the soil to spread manure? How can we utilize farming practices or cover crops? You know, there's a plethora of things that we have in our playbook that we can use to keep that soil health. And I think really the more we can do that, the more people can, whether they're conventional or organic, the more they can think about how we can take care of the soil and taking care of all the mycorrhizobi and all the living life that's below the soil. If we have good soil, good life below the soil, we're going to have good plant life. If we have good plant life, we're going to have good, healthy animals.
Okay, I hope I asked this question well, because we live in the Red River Valley of North Dakota, where we're on the bottom of an ancient lake, glacial lake, and we have feet of topsoil, but not everybody does. And so for you, are animals, your cattle and your pork or your pigs, are they only grazing in pasture or are they grazing on cropland so you can help see reduced compaction in your soil layers? Or what is your soil layer like?
Yeah, we have great soil here too. We've got a little valley and you know, our soils for the most part are really great. But, you know, we rotate our cattle around and our pigs around on different paddocks all the time. We're moving our cattle during the summer growing months. We're moving them every couple days. So we're able to spread the manure around. We're able to, you know, that's less impact on the grass. We usually have a 45-day rotation, so we're not back on the same grass for about another 45 days. Gives the grass a chance to get some water and grow back up and you know, be healthy, basically. But yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, each area is going to be a little bit different when it comes to taking care of your soil, what you need to do, how you need to do it. We try to utilize cover crops, like I mentioned earlier, because the more diverse plant life you have, the more, you know, the more that's going to help with your soil. It's going to bring things that are neat in your soil. And then certain plants utilize what's in the soil differently. So, you know, whether you have perfect soil or marginal soil, there's always some plants that utilize it differently. And you know, understanding what that is for your area and your soil type is important and trying to offer that up for the soil and also for the animals.
Okay, this might sound kind of silly, but I heard you say something when we were talking about manure management. I want to say you mentioned composting and teas, and that's not a tea that's in a to-go cup, if I'm not mistaken.
You're exactly right. So yeah, compost tea is basically taking any minerals that you want to add to your plants or your soil and essentially a manure base. And you basically let it you know, act as a tea bag in a bunch of water. And that product then can be sprayed foliar. So basically you're getting a mist out there and you're putting on the leaves of the plant. And it puts those nutrients directly into the plant. And it helps by being able to target an exact problem that you might have. Like, let's say you're low on iron or you know, have you some deficiency, magnesium, something. You can actually add that to your compost tea and then go spray it out in the fields. And then that the plants absorb it and that gets you what you need. So, you know, it's kind of a newer thing, but, you know, I think a lot of people are really taking it to heart and understanding what it can do for your plants.
So Jason, I have a copy of your newsletter and I've been kind of scrolling through that as well today. When you started your newsletter, my guess is you were there to educate and inform your customers. But do your customers now ask you questions that make great topics of discussion in your newsletter? And where can people find that, by the way?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. I think that, you know, obviously social media is the best way to interact with us. You know, we're active on that, and we get questions all the time. We try to help answer them. Sometimes we even make videos to address the questions. You know, if people have specific questions on our newsletter or anything on the website, there's an email link. I think it's info@starwalkerorganicfarms.com. But I think that's the best way to interact with us and get a hold of us. Also, our social media, you know, we've got Instagram, TikTok, and those are really popular, and you know, we can do a lot of communication with our customer base, and maybe even people that aren't our customer base yet but want to hear more about what we're doing and understand it.
And just oops, sorry, go ahead, Bridget.
Go ahead, Dean.
I was going to say,
go ahead. We've got a 1 second delay between us that sometimes hurts.
Jason, less than 3% of farming in the United States is organic. So obviously, it's increased since 2021, but still, obviously, it's in the minority. So it can't be that easy to do. What is the biggest hurdle that you've had to overcome being all organic?
Yeah, that's another great question. You know, there's been many hurdles over the years. You know, I think the difference with organic and conventional is in conventional agriculture, you know, there's a lot of times there's a silver bullet for a problem you might have. You might, you know, have a pest problem or a weed problem. And you know, the conventional agriculture has got really good at figuring out how we can solve those problems. Well, in organic, you know, we don't have any silver bullets to solve problems. We kind of have to go back to basics and, you know, figure out what might be the root cause of that problem. Is it a deficiency in the soil? Is it a, you know, a water issue? Is it, like a fertilizer issue? And we kind of have to, you know, do a little bit of investigation and then trial and error. So, I mean, I would say that the biggest hang up is, you know, just trying to take the time to figure out what we need to do, how to address problems, and then the steps to do it. You know, that might take a couple years to get it figured out. It might take some trial and error on some different crops to realize what works for a certain area or what works for a certain soil type. So, I mean, you know, when you do trial and error, you're going to naturally lose a little bit of money, and it's going to be a learning. But the cool thing is there's a great community in the organic world, and you know, there's definitely people you can talk to that have some experience, whether it's, you know, in plants or animal agriculture side of it. And so, I mean, being able to reference those people and see how they've done it and, you know, duplicate that, you know, I think at the end of the day, I understand organic is a small percentage of the overall agriculture operation, and you know, it's probably never going to be fully organic, but the demand is there. It's year after year, people are demanding the products we have and other organic producers have. And so I think that, you know, if we can help as a whole farming community, you know, understand maybe some of the practices that organic people are doing or regenerative people are doing, and apply some of those on conventional farms to, you know, not only help the soil, but also to be able to use, you know, less synthetic fertilizers and chemicals, that would be great. I don't expect everybody to do that, but I understand that, you know, everybody's got to make a living, and you know, but we do have a lot of hurdles to overcome, and you know, I think it's just trial and error. That's what gets us through.
I think there's so many places for a variety of markets within ag, whether we're conventional, whether we're regenerative or organic, et cetera. There's always a place for someone in this market is what I can see. And I think you really embody that with Starwalker Organic Farm.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah, we've definitely found our niche, and we love what we do. And, you know, we get a ton of support, and you know, we obviously are going to keep chugging away and pumping out some great products for people to enjoy.
All right. Well, Jason, if anybody wants to get a hold of you or order some of your wonderful products, and I'm online here looking at it right now, I guess your beef jerky is out of this world. So we, Bridget and I might have to, we might have to make an order here.
It's hard to host a radio show when you're online shopping your guests.
I know, right? Exactly. I'm like, come on, Bridget. So Jason, how can people get a hold of you, or if they're interested in, and I'm guessing you ship anywhere in the US, correct?
Yeah, we ship nationwide, and all of our frozen products, our meat, they ship next day. Our jerky ships, regular. It doesn't have to be frozen, so we're able to extend our shipping time on that. But we can. Our website's the best, StarWalkerOrganicFarms.com. You can see everything we do there. We also, like I mentioned earlier, we have our social media. We got Instagram, Starwalker Farms. I think our TikTok is Starwalker Farm Life. I think there's plenty of avenues there where you can connect with us, ask questions, get information, look at our products. We just released our jerky into Sprouts nationwide, so that's kind of fun. We were on the shelves all over the country. Our jerky's been very popular. It's flying off the shelves, and we've got a bunch more products to come that we're going to be releasing now that we have our own processing plant. We're able to really get creative, and so there's going to be some fun things coming out here in the next few months.
Just in time for Christmas. Bridget, hint.
Yes.
Hint.
I got that one.
Right. Well, Jason, thank you so much for joining us today. And again, if you want to get a hold of Jason, just log on to his website there. That jerky looks unbelievable. All right. Yeah, we're going to have to order that. So we've got a short break here. We'll come back with a recap of the weather, hit a couple of ag topics. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus. 1:54 in the afternoon. Temperatures out there are in the 50s across much of the area. A few 40s out to the west. And not going to see any more sunshine, doesn't look like, for the rest of the day. Maybe a peak or two here and there. A lot of clouds. Breezy. What a difference between this morning and then this afternoon. I mean, it was in the 60s this morning. Not much wind. Yeah. Felt great. Now it feels like October should outside. Pretty good, decent cold front that pushed through the area.
Just kind of how it's going to be. The good news is that we're going to get a little bit more of a warm up as well. And weather's looking nice, like even into next week, Dean.
Well, to the start of next week. Yeah, it really does. In fact, right. And hey, right now, the middle of next week looks a little questionable, but that will change probably two or three times between now and then. But some unbelievable weather for this month of October. You know, we were talking earlier, and let's see if you know the answer to this. So we didn't have much snow last winter. Obviously, we all know that. When was our first snowfall last season?
Last year?
Yeah.
Okay, I've learned to ask this question. Was it snowfall or was it measurable snow that stayed?
Measurable snow, at least a tenth of an inch.
We had some early, like in October, and then it was gone, and we were all spooked because we thought it was going to be an awful winter.
You are 100% correct. So Ronnie and Janae earlier thought it was in December, and I said, no, it was actually 4 days from today, October 26th. Mm-hmm. We had a big rainstorm that was followed by some measurable snow, and then we had another snow event right at the end of October on the 31st, which gave us another inch or so of snow then. So, yeah, we had snow early last winter, but didn't have much at all, and there's no snow in the forecast. In fact, we're looking at temperatures today falling into the 40s as we head throughout the afternoon and evening hours with the northwest wind a little on the breezy side. We'll bottom out in the mid-30s tonight, plenty of sunshine tomorrow, mid-50s, and then a few more clouds on Thursday, a sprinkle or two, but nothing really to worry about there. And highs in the low 60s Thursday. Friday, we cool down into the low to mid-50s, but plenty of sunshine Friday, Saturday, Sunday, with windy conditions developing Saturday and Sunday. But temperatures in the 60s, both Saturday and Sunday. We've really been lucky on the weekend weather we've had. Outside of wind, our weekend weather really has been pretty darn nice around here. Now, by the middle of next week, a couple of our models are hinting at a storm system coming our way. Our European model has a big storm heading our way with mainly rain. And that would not be a bad thing. If we could get a widespread half inch to an inch of rain, that would help things out quite a bit around here, because we've got to get a little moisture in the ground before we get a real, real hard freeze.
We'd be happy to have some extra.
Yeah. I mean, it's just been too dry.
And our folks out in Western North Dakota would really like that rainfall. The wildfires are 100% contained. And good news, North Dakota Stockman's Foundation, along with their Stockman's Association, kicked off a wildfire disaster relief program with a donation of $50,000. It has grown. ExxonMobil stepped up and added $100,000 to it. And with all the private donations, we are currently at $250,000 for farmers and ranchers. More to come. Please continue to call them and add to it, because it is well worth our time to support those ranchers in Western North Dakota.
Yeah, no doubt. And I mean, they're under parts of the far western part of the state is under extreme drought. So we really need some moisture out there. Fingers crossed next week that storm holds through and gives us all some much needed rainfall and or snow. We'll take the rain, though.
We'll take it.
Yeah, no doubt. For Bridget, myself, I want to thank everybody for joining us. The number one show in North Dakota. It might be all of North America. I'm going to check with it. Jay Thomas Show. It's coming up next.